You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
It's time for What's Up with the Leader of the Opposition, Chris Hipkins.
Morning, Chris. How are you this morning?
I'm very good, thanks. How are you?
Good. It's nice to chat with you today. Plenty going on, as there always is at the moment. Lots of things being passed under urgency from the current government, which I do want to start by talking about. One thing that we've seen go through in the last couple of weeks is fast-track consenting around projects that could be undertaken, infrastructure projects that could be undertaken on conservation land or in national parks. That has obviously copped a lot of blowback from the environmental sector. What is the Labor Party's position on this at the moment? What are your concerns or thoughts at this stage?
I think the government needs to be much more transparent about what they're doing. I'm not a fan of mining our national parks. I think our national parks should be left as they are, you know. Let's see the detail of what the government are proposing. But we were pretty clear in government that this isn't an area that we would go into.
This is something that the environmental sector is saying they feel they haven't been sufficiently consulted on. Do you think, looking at what we've seen, that is a fair concern from that sector?
Well, I think that is a fair concern, but I actually think a bigger concern is that the government are proposing to change the law so that those with concerns around the environment are consulted even less, and are potentially shut out of decisions around things like mining, where they basically become the fiat of ministers who can just make that decision without reference to anybody else. I don't think that's consistent with New Zealand's democratic tradition, and it's very Muldoonist. You know, we've seen it in the past in New Zealand where Rob Muldoon decided that he should just, be the ultimate decider of everything. And it didn't end well for us as a country.
So how concerned should people be about this? Is this something that the Labor Party sees as requiring strong pushback?
Oh, I think we'll be pushing back pretty hard on the decisions that they're taking around fast-tracking. I do think that there are processes, that can be sped up. Some of our resource consent decision-making processes can be very slow, and in some cases they're holding back developments that we should all be relatively supportive of, things like building more houses to make sure that we don't have homeless people. But on the other hand, we've also got to balance up the needs of our natural environment and of future generations in making those decisions. So yep, some of the processes can be faster, but the idea that you actually just abolish the processes altogether and just let ministers decide willy-nilly what is allowable and what isn't, I think is a step that's well and truly too far.
We've seen a lot of bills pushed through under urgency recently from this government. Is that something in and of itself that your party or that the opposition parties are concerned about? This feels like quite a significant, roster of bills that have come through with this speed attached to them.
Urgency has a place in Parliament, and we used urgency a bit when we were dealing with the global pandemic, for example. There were decisions that genuinely needed to be made in a real hurry, and so urgency is an important part of the process. I think it's being abused by this government. I think that they are pushing law changes through under urgency so that the public don't have time to properly scrutinise what they're doing. They rolled back our smoke-free law changes under urgency because I don't think they wanted the New Zealand public to have much time to digest the fact that they're actually aiming to increase the number of people who are smoking in order to pay for tax cuts. I think that there is a place for urgency, and I'm not going to say that no government should ever use urgency, but I think the way it's being used by this government is an absolute abusive process.
Well, let's talk a wee bit about housing, since we've touched on it very briefly already. Chris Bishop has asked Kāinga Ora, which obviously manages the government's public housing, to stop using its sustaining tenancies framework, which is essentially a homelessness prevention service. And this also includes bringing in more sanctions and acting more harshly towards people who are accused of behaving antisocially in Kāinga Ora housing. One thing that's come out in this last week is that 43% of people who are accused of this antisocial behaviour have children living in the household. Do you think this is something that should be taken into consideration when something like stronger sanctions or issues like this are being raised by the government?
So the sustaining tenancies framework was actually introduced under the previous national government. So we didn't change it, you know, we didn't remove it or put it in place. It was actually, I think it was Amy Adams who was the minister who put that law, that system in place. And it was driven by really legitimate concerns about the fact that you had people being made homeless, people living in cars, living in garages, because they didn't have anywhere else to go, and that included children. So sustaining tenancies should be the goal. I recognise the fact that there are a small group of tenants who whose behaviour does mean we need to do something more about them. In about 90% of the cases where they're relocated, then actually the problem goes away. And so that should be, I guess, the first port of call rather than evicting people. It should be saying, look, you know, you've been repeatedly in conflict with your neighbours. You are at fault within that conflict. Therefore, you should be relocated. And if this continues, then we would look at something like eviction. The issue with eviction is before you get to that stage, you actually have to look at who else is going to be affected. You know, a household full of children can't control the fact that their parents might be behaving badly towards neighbours. So you have to think about what happens to the children if the parents are evicted. And I've not seen any evidence that the government have thought about that. And they do need to think about that. What is going to happen to those children? They need to be able to answer that question.
We have also seen Chris Bishop is calling for greater focus on recovering debt or rent, essentially, that's not being paid. Do you think this is a sustainable model for managing that issue?
I deal with, you know, various cases like this through my electorate office. And in many cases, you know, the people who find themselves in debt are living a very, very hand-to-mouth existence. So where they accumulate debt, sometimes things will go wrong for them, you know, and they'll end up with an unexpected bill. You know, the car will break down and they'll have to spend money to fix the car that they weren't expecting. And, you know, they'll end up in rent arrears because they just, you know, are struggling. They're just really struggling to get by. And in those cases, you know, some of them, they can only afford maybe $5 or $10 a week extra to pay back the debt, which means they're going to be paying back the debt for a long period of time. But the alternative is to cause even further financial hardship. You know, if there are a few, you know, it can only be a few thousand dollars in some cases, but for families who are literally surviving week to week, that can be a huge hurdle to overcome.
Mm, absolutely. Very briefly before we let you go, Chris, we have seen a change of heart from the government around road user charges for plug-in hybrids. So we are going to see that they would be paying about $38 per 1,000 kilometres driven under taxes to pay for road upkeep. Are you pleased to hear this change, this kind of, I guess, change of heart or pivot, you might want to call it?
I am, because I think the changes around plug-in hybrids is less straightforward than electric vehicles. You know, electric vehicles drive 100% of the time on battery, so therefore the people who are driving them aren't paying any contribution towards the upkeep of the roads through fuel taxes. Plug-in hybrids are more difficult because if you get an older plug-in hybrid, then, you know, potentially they're not travelling on battery very much at all, and so they're going to be mostly travelling on petrol or diesel, which means they're already paying. So they're effectively paying twice if they have to pay a higher road user charge. And so I think that, you know, setting the road user charges for plug-in hybrids at a lower rate means that we won't be, you know, punishing people who are trying to do the right thing by the environment by using a plug-in hybrid where they can.
Mm. Well, thank you very much for your time this morning. Chris Hipkins, it's great to have you on the show. We'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks. Take care until then.
No worries. Good to talk to you.
Kia ora.
That was What's Up with Leader of the Opposition, Chris Hipkins.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.